Hello, everybody, my name is and this is Man's Gadget Talk for Friday, 12th of May, 2023. This week's episode, we've got plenty of things to talk about. Google did its I.O. event, showing off the newest versions of their software and updates to their services, and of course, some juicy new hardware. On top of that, we got plenty more things to talk about. Apple has dropped two Pro apps for the iPad. The Final Cut Pro and Logic Pro are coming to the iPad. We're going to touch on it a little bit later. And we're also going to talk about some new phones and more details about the ROG Ally. So without further ado, let's get rolling, shall we? Early on Wednesday, Google did its I.O. event, its annual developers conference, showcasing the latest updates and, you know, improvements to the software and services. And interestingly, obviously this year has been all about one thing and one thing only, AI, and you guessed it, artificial intelligence. I would love to say that Google I.O. is more like Google AI conference. Anyways, they had this interesting statement that they obviously touched upon over and over, but I'll always read it from their blog post here. Quote, we believe our approach to AI must be bold, must be both bold and responsible. To us, that means developing AI in a way that maximizes the positive benefits to society while addressing the challenges guided by our AI principles. And you're probably wondering about what on earth is the AI principles, but they're pretty interesting. And that is, number one, be socially beneficial. Number two, avoid creating or reinforcing unfair bias. Three, be built and tested for safety. Number four, be accountable to people. Incorporate privacy design principles, uphold high standards of scientific excellence, and be made available for uses that accord with these principles, which is interesting. These are basically their seven principles, more like their seven commandments of how to run and do AI as a large company as Google. And interestingly enough, they also have a set of, and also they have mentioned applications that they're not going to go out and pursue, and these generally cover fact that they're not going to build AI technology that involves surveillance, violating international laws and accepted norms, you know, technology that could cause harm, and weapons-related technology for AI, and fourth, technologies whose purpose contravenes widely accepted principles of international law and human rights, you know, like the Geneva Convention, if you know what I'm talking about. So that's pretty interesting in a way. That Google has not only just focused on AI, but also has pointed out that they have some guidelines and are trying to be responsible given what's happened in the past with other players and their use of AI and obviously their use of data and all that kind of stuff. But on top of that, interestingly, Google did bring up AI quite a lot. More generally, their generative AI model. It's essentially the answer to ChatGPT or GPT 4.0 that has come out a few months back, which really has changed the game in the world of generative large language model AI. So first was they touched upon the newest version of their model, which was called Palm 2. And that basically allows it gives it more power essentially in its hands. So interestingly enough, it's their next generation LLM, which is obviously AI industry jargon speak for, you know, models like GPT 4.0. And it comes with improved multilingual functionality. Its reasoning comes from apparently improved capabilities in logic, common sense, reasoning, and mathematics. And also, it's been trained on a whole lot of source code data sets. That means it should be good at responding to prompts about programming. So if you ask it prompts for code for JavaScript or Python, it'll spiff off a result fairly accurately. But on top of everything, I've touched upon it a little earlier, Palm 2 is also designed to work on over 100 languages, and that means it can understand and generate and translate nuanced text. So that's pretty interesting in a way. And it comes in four different sizes, from Gecko all the way to Unicorn, whereas Gecko, for example, is built so it's quite lightweight, so it can run on your mobile device, and it's quite, and again, it doesn't need to connect to the cloud all the time, which makes sense given that generative AI is all the rage and it's all over the place right now. And that's really interesting in a way. Google's Palm 2 model is behind several products is really the engine that's being used on different Google products. In fact, 25 new products and features have been announced that are going to be using the Palm 2 model, including an updated version of Google's Bard chatbot, which again would give it improved capability with generating responses, and things like, for example, in Google Workspace, which is like Google Docs and, you know, the Google suite of document editing apps and Gmail, Duet AI, which basically is like a little chatbot on the side, a little sidekick, as a lot of the folks at the keynote said yesterday. And that basically is that, for example, if you want to generate a background, AI-generated background, you can get Duet to do that for you and generate a interesting subtext behind it, so you don't have to work your brain that much, interestingly. But it's a cool feature that definitely uses Palm 2. On top of that, they've even made specialized versions to help detect security, cybersecurity analysis, and medical, and again give you responses to medical issues, which I think is pretty awesome in a way. And if you're a developer or have a SaaS tool or an app, you can integrate Google's models, and again, Google's offering tools. You can definitely check that out if you have the time. But yeah, interestingly, but wait, there's more. Google also is apparently working on the next model, as if the current Palm 2 is not enough. It'll get slow, obviously, by the next year, in the next following year. They're working on Gemini, which apparently is supposed to, from the ground up, be multimodal, highly efficient at tool and API integrations, and enable future innovations like memory and planning. So it's currently in the training phase. So they're going to have another more advanced LLM AI model that will do generative AI like a boss, potentially. So that's pretty cool in a way. But also at Google I/O, they did show off a whole bunch of other things on top of Palm 2 and all the cool stuff coming with the model, including Project Tailwind. So if you're a developer, you're going to definitely love this. It's an AI-first notebook. So you could get start up a new document, you put your source materials or PDFs or stuff like that, and then you get into your notebook and you can kind of, it's an interface quite like typical chatbots, and you can kind of ask it things and generate responses and add stuff to your notebook. So that's pretty cool and probably would help developers and students alike. So that's pretty awesome in a way. And also Google did show off a new sort of improved version of their search engine, giving you apparently search and generative experience. That means you'll get a response, a kind of a response using that's been AI generated, and you can obviously follow it up through the search, and that's going to be coming down the road, and it's already sort of in testing, so that's pretty cool in a way. But what we really are excited more than all of that is Android 14, which is going to be the latest version of the Android operating system that powers all our phones and tablets and foldables. So, firstly, Google obviously brought a generative AI to the forefront, and that kind of means it helps in a whole bunch of places for Google. Number one, it can help you sort of automatically create wallpapers that are basically AI-generated photos, but you can make turn that into a wallpaper right from the settings, so that's pretty cool in a way. On top of everything, you can also, it helps you in the Messages app, the RCS one, see, you know, the RCS Messages app, and that means you can ask it, you can ask the AI bot to generate a effective text, or probably generate an image and obviously let you send it to your friends, so that's pretty cool in a way. But that's not all. I was already speaking about the AI generated wallpapers. That's because they've also showed off some new personalization tools that includes, as I said, you'll be able to sort of tweak your lock screen and give it some personality without the need of getting a launcher in that sense. You also get a monochrome color theme that can be applied across the device, so that's pretty interesting in a way. And a cinematic wallpaper mode, so you can take a photo, and since you create a 3D image, and as you tilt your phone around, you can see the depth out of it, so that's pretty interesting in a way. And yeah, and again, it improves on Android 13 and material use, so that's pretty cool in a way. But there's more on Android 14. So firstly, you get Ultra HDR mode, which is now available on Android 14, that apparently will give you greater range of brightness, colors, and contrast, and will probably be well supported. And Google Photos will support this format from day one when it's available on Android 14. And again, covers all potential use cases from viewing to creation, so that's interesting in a way. And also you get HDR video support's available. You also get HDR image support, which will be improved. You may be thinking there's already HDR on camera photos, on smartphone photos, but this one is obviously a dramatic step up in a way. On top of that, Android 14 will come with improved privacy and security features. So you get a Health Connect app starting out that lets you sort of select what kind of data you want to share with third-party services and apps. Another one is partial screen sharing mode, which means you can decide whether you want the app, whether you want to share only the app or the whole screen. So you can make that choice right within the app. And also you get monthly data sharing updates for location roundups. So that's pretty interesting in a way. And you also be able to sort of see what data is being shared and again how your location data is being shared. So it's pretty interesting. And I kind of touched upon the monochrome mode, but you also get, you'll also be getting a high contrast mode and a medium contrast mode. So that's pretty cool if you're into that kind of stuff. And lastly, you also get content-based dynamic color UI into modules. So that's components, mind you. So that's pretty cool. These are small things, but they'll go a very long way when you use your phone or Android 14, that is. So that's pretty cool in a way. But that's not the only thing that's come to the latest version of Android. You want to remember that Android is across a whole range of devices. So we also got more details about Wear OS 4. So you'll be getting a whole bunch of new things with Wear OS 4.0. Firstly, you get the you get new controls in the Google Home app. You have access to Gmail and Google Calendar within your smartwatch, which has never happened before. So that's pretty cool in a way. And finally, for the first time, WhatsApp will have a smartwatch app. Wow, it's taken almost a century or almost forever for WhatsApp to bring a smartwatch app, but primarily it'll be coming to Google's Wear OS. So that's pretty cool in a way. And also you'll be getting tiles that'll give you information with a click glance. This is probably similar to Apple's is rumored widgets for the Apple Watch in the future that may be coming. But tiles again gives you glances of information. You sort of swipe and you can see, you can get through things. That's pretty cool in a way. And also you get apparently improved backup and restore functionality, which should be available from day one, according to some folks. So that's pretty interesting in a way. And you also have watch face format, which is they've designed in the background, again with Samsung, and that allows developers and designers to create watch faces that are pretty cool and power efficient and share them easily, so you can add it to your Google Wear OS smartwatch. So that's pretty cool in a way. It'll be like Android 14, it'll be coming later in the year, so that's pretty exciting in a way. But on top of all of that, they also showed off some new things coming to Android Automotive OS, which is for EVs and cars in general. So an update, really. You'll be getting the YouTube app finally on select cars in the next couple of weeks, so that's pretty cool in a way. It should be able to port tablet apps to Android Automotive, so it should make the development process a little bit easier in the meanwhile. But also they revealed multi-display support. And that kind of means that essentially Google, that means Android Automotive OS 14 will support cars with multiple displays, you know, the front and the display on the passenger side and the back screens. And you'll be able to sort of select what kind of content goes to what screens. So that's pretty cool in a way. But this is really all what Google will be bringing to the table in the next couple of months. The dramatically improved generative AI, the newest version of Android. And it's kind of exciting in a way. Now, if you really want to get your hands on Android 14, good news, Google is bringing it, launched the beta, so you can now run it on your devices. So a bunch of devices will be supported with the beta. So if you have the Lenovo Tab Extreme, the Nothing Phone 1, the OnePlus 11, the Oppo Find N2 and Find N2, the Realme GT2 Pro, the Tecno Camon 20 series, and Google's latest, and basically all of Google's Pixel phones from the Pixel 4a till now, including the 7 series, the Vivo X90, the Xiaomi 13, 13 Pro and 12T, you'll be able to install the Android 14 beta and obviously play it, really, you know, give it a try. So that's pretty cool in a way. Moving over to the hardware side of things, the software and the services are exciting, of course, on their own. But Google also showed off some new hardware at the main keynote event. First is the Google Pixel 7a. It's kind of been leaked so much that there's not much that was really revealed other than the highly obvious. So to start with, you get a 90 hertz display, you get 8 gigabytes of RAM, 128 or 256 gigabytes of storage, face unlock, a fingerprint sensor on the power button, which is there, of course, the Google Tensor G2 chip, the Titan M2 security chip, which is what makes Pixels quite special compared to the competition. Again, it's quite it's an affordable version of the Pixel 7 series. It's the latest A series phone, so it's affordable in a way, but again, you get improved display and processor and wireless charging and fast charging, so that's pretty cool in a way. And all the Pixel bonus features that you'd kind of get out of the gate, including all the AI functionality like call screen, hold for me, and much more, and the AI camera functionality Google does bring to the table in a way, and of course stuff like live translate, pretty much. So you get a regular and an ultra wide angle sensor. We don't know the main resolution of the main camera, but apparently it's been upgraded compared to the previous A series phone from Google. You'll be able to capture 4K video on the selfie camera, which is a 13 megapixel front-facing camera, so that's pretty and punch hole notch camera, so that's pretty cool in a way. And comes a super res zoom up to 8x to give you sharp high quality photos. But as I said, it comes with all the Pixel camera goodies that you definitely get, like Magic Eraser and Photo and Blur, and hopefully later in the year new features like Magic Editor, which apparently lets you edit entire photos using AI, which is pretty exciting. So if you've kind of got if there's an object that's kind of been missing in the photo, you can kind of move it. You can see the videos online. It's quite fun in a way. And you get Real Tone, which comes on Pixel's cameras, giving you sort of quite accurate skin tones. The Pixel 7a will cost $500, and it's already available in stores and on Google's site, and obviously wherever you buy your phones. So that's pretty cool in a way. And then while we're at it, Google, well, beyond just the latest Pixel A series phone, has shown off a new foldable, the Pixel Fold. Now, last week we talked about the design of the phone sort of being officially revealed by Google, but it's been heavily leaked. But now we got the Pixel Fold. It's their first ever folding device. Let's just say it's a bit of a template for what Google wants of an Android-powered foldable in a way. To start with, you got this sort of compact design. You got this kind of thick phone that obviously opens out to a 7.6-inch inner display. From the photos, it's literally a Pixel 7 Pro Fold, if that ever existed. But it's an interesting phone. You have a stainless steel hinge inside, which is pretty cool. But as I said, the phone sort of protects the hinge that's coming outwards, so it's quite compact. And speaking of which, in terms of durability, it is rated IPX8 for water resistance, so that's pretty cool in a way. And if you're already talking about software features, which should make this phone quite interesting, you've got features, for example, you've got the typical multi-screen functionality, multiple apps sort of running at once, and a seamless transition from the outer to inner display, which obviously makes this foldable unique from the competition. But interestingly, you have, as I said, you can, again, the outer display will let you do all the usual phone things, but you go when you switch to the inner display, it sort of becomes like a small tablet from the get-go. But also you got a taskbar, so you can sort of swipe up and quickly access your apps, like the Z Fold 4 and the little taskbar they've have on the version of Android. But on top of that, you have all the other typical, including things like tabletop mode, and also, and as seen in the keynote, on the keynote they showed off dual screen interpreter mode, and that basically means the inner display you can converse and talk to people who don't speak the same language as you, and sort of do live translation in real time. And obviously this is based on top of Pixel's live translation feature, interpreter feature. Obviously, 4 foldables, which is exciting. The outer display then sort of shows the result in the other language and the person you're talking to's language. So that's pretty cool. And they'll be coming later this year in a software update with Android 14. The Pixel Fold, again, comes with a Tensor G2 chip. And as I said, comes with like 8 gigabytes of RAM, roughly, with over 256 gigabytes of storage and all the sort of goodies. Let's just say the closest it is really to the Pixel 7 Pro, which is what you can kind of compare it to primarily. So on the back of the phone, you get 48 megapixel main camera, along with, as I said, multiple sensors, including a telephoto sensor, which is pretty cool in a way. And best part, like most folding phones of this caliber, you could use the rear cameras for a high-res selfie camera. So that's pretty cool in a way. And this folding phone will start from $1,800, so it's competing right up there with the Galaxy Z Fold 4, because in the US you don't have the Oppo or Vivo foldables, so it'll sort of compete in price with the Samsung's option. And you're getting a Pixel Watch for free with a purchase of the Pixel Fold when you pre-order it in the US, so that's pretty exciting in a way. And finally, the last piece of hardware that Google showed off at its keynote is the Pixel tablet, which was teased last year as finally a brand new Android tablet that Google is offering. And let's just say it didn't really disappoint, but you can clearly tell the target market or target demographic. If you're a casual tablet user, you love to consume and watch content, you want a smart home hub, this tablet is really for you. So you have four built-in speakers for this kind of crispy stereo audio quality, 11-inch display, you got this kind of unique nano ceramic coating back. It's aluminium enclosure, but at the back it kind of feels easy to grip primarily. But more than everything, it's obviously got the latest version of Android, Google's own skin of Android primarily, so it's going to be snappy and crisp in a way. You've got all the Google Pixel exclusive features like Magic Razor and the Unblur feature that I've kind of talked about, the photo Unblur, mind you, and improved voice dictation, which will be apparently be 3 times faster than regular typing. So that's pretty cool in a way. And on top of that, you get a charging speaker dock that's included with the Pixel tablet. And what it lets you do is essentially turns it into a bit of a Nest hub. So you get hub mode, so you can control a smart home, you can play music and content, you can activate Google Assistant, and again, you get Chromecast built right in, so you can cast your photos and videos and music straight onto the Pixel tablet. So it makes it a very good smart home hub and a good smart speaker, albeit a premium one, a nice feeling and looking one for the money. And you're probably wondering about price. The Pixel tablet will start at $500 or $499 with the speaker dock. It'll be a little bit more expensive in Europe and other regions, give or take. So that's pretty interesting in a way. But the best part is that the tablet will be coming with the speaker dock. So that makes it a fairly decent deal if you look at it. And you're probably wondering about storage and processor. This will be coming with 256GB of storage straight off the bat, and the Tensor G2 chip and 8GB of RAM. The thing is, it's not going to be an iPad Air killer or iPad Pro killer on the Android side of things. I think the OnePlus Pad and the Galaxy Tab series from Samsung compete with the Apple iPad in the world of Android primarily. This one is a casual device, and I've said it from the get-go, it really is a casual device for content consumption, for seeing your emails, doing video calls, that kind of things people buy tablets for. And kind of spend $50, but it's pretty flimsy. But if you want to spend a good amount of money and be satisfied with the very best of Android, there's the Pixel tablet. And it's a pretty interesting device, primarily. And again, it'll be available on June 20th. So again, if you're in the market for a well-polished stock Android tablet, you might want to look at the Pixel tablet. But you think about it, Google really has shown off a lot of AI-powered functionality and features. Generative AI has kind of been the rage of town. The model sounds promising, primarily, but also the Pixel Fold looks like an interesting device. The Pixel 7a, a little too late, but better than nothing, you know. And as I said, pretty cool stuff from Google, nonetheless. They're trying not to be evil, and you can clearly tell, in a way. Right, moving on, let's talk about another exciting piece of technology that we'll definitely get to see in the next couple of days and weeks. Apple, before WWDC, has dropped something interesting and something that people have been asking for years. So if you've ever had an iPad Pro, that device is really capable. That tablet really could pack a serious punch, but it really lacked two key apps that kind of stopped people from getting an iPad and instead made people get an MacBook Pro, and that is Final Cut Pro and Logic Pro, the two of the most popular Pro apps out there, one for video editing and one to edit music and audio. And now Apple has announced that they're launching an iPad version of these apps, so you don't really need a MacBook after this. So Final Cut Pro and Logic Pro obviously come with an iPad-friendly interface. Final Cut Pro primarily has a magnetic timeline, and obviously you can literally draw on top of the video preview you have with Apple Pencil, and you can again with the Apple Pencil skim through footage. And also there is a pretty cool slider on the right side of the display, so you can sort of run around and again run through your edit really quickly. So that's pretty cool in a way. And on top of that, you'll be able to edit, you'll be able to deal with multi-cam video editing. Again, capture, edit, and publish from a single device, which is the iPad Pro. So that's pretty cool in a way. And if you have the iPad Pro with M2, you can record your videos from Final Cut Pro app in ProRes. So that's pretty cool in a way. You can monitor audio, you can see the recording time, and you can see all those settings right away. And also, interestingly, they have a feature for the iPad version, which is called Scene Removal Mask. So it's kind of similar to the AI-powered green screen modes on different editing apps like CapCut. So you essentially get machine learning sort of removes a background in videos, and you can essentially get, again, a green screen effect. So that's pretty cool in a way, along with audio crop. So that's pretty cool. And noise cancellation that, again, Apple's added because you have AI processing on now in Final Cut. So that's pretty cool in a way. And you get get audio and graphics, so that's pretty interesting in a way. And fun fact, if you have an iMovie project, you can move it over to Final Cut Pro, so that's pretty cool in a way. And on the flip side, we have Logic Pro for the iPad, like the one on Mac. Obviously good for creating high resolution music and obviously complex tracks. And obviously on the iPad, it comes in multi-touch gestures, plug-in tiles, and again, you can sort of capture voice and instrument recordings using the mics on the iPad, as Apple stated. And also you can browse through plugins and patches and loops and samples. So that's pretty cool. And again, Logic Pro will come with over 100 instruments and effects plugins for the iPad version. So that's pretty cool in a way. I don't produce music, but this will definitely help with for a lot of people who have an iPad Pro. And also you get a full-featured Pro Mixer like the one on the Mac. And fun fact, again, like on Final Cut Pro, if you have got projects in GarageBand, for example, you can send them over to Logic Pro to obviously work on them further. So that's pretty cool in a way. And fun fact for both apps, if you started working on the iPad, the project, you can move it over to the Mac, finish working on it, and export. So that's pretty cool in a way. But here's the interesting part about both apps being available on the iPad. They're going to be coming with a subscription. So Final Cut Pro and Logic Pro for iPad will be available from May 23rd. And it'll be available for around $499 a month, or $5 a month roughly, or $49 a year with a 1 month free trial, instead of the hundreds of dollars, or probably nearly over hundreds of dollars, purchase price for these software. So that's pretty interesting. So $5 for Final Cut Pro and Logic Pro separately, kind of. So will you be willing to pay $5 for Final Cut Pro on iPad a month, or the $50 year subscription fee? I'd love to know your thoughts. All the contact details are in the show notes. But finally, about time that Apple brought over all this cutting edge functionality. One thing I want to state after all this is that Final Cut Pro is compatible with M1 and above iPads. So that includes the latest iPad Air and Pro. And Logic Pro, on the other hand, supported on iPads with the A12 Bionic and later. So that's something to keep in mind. But as I said, would you be willing to pay $5 a month for Final Cut Pro? I honestly think I would if I had an iPad Pro, to be fair. Now it makes sense to purchase an iPad Pro, because the value is now definitely there, because you can now do a lot more with it, and you can do full-on video editing and audio production. So that's pretty cool in a way. Now you can kind of go pro with your iPad. So I think that's wonderful. You know, it's incredible to see in a decade, we've gone from being able to read ebooks and emails on iPads all the way to be able to record and edit full-blown ProRes videos. And that's one, and audio also, so that's wonderful. I mean, you could do it with third-party apps before, but now Apple has brought their very own Pro Tools to the iPad. So it's incredible to see how far we've come in a way. All right, switching gears pretty much from Apple and Google over to some new gadgets that we've gotten this past week. So first is the Xperia 1 Mark V, the latest flagship from Sony. It comes with the best-in-class camera, pretty much, Snapdragon 8 Gen 2, that incredible 4K display, 6.5-inch, 120Hz 4K OLED display, 21:9 aspect ratio, by the way. On top of that, you have a lot of, pretty much a full 24mm full frame, equivalent to a full frame camera main sensor on Xperia 1 Mark V. That again, apparently is 1.7 times larger than the previous sensor and comes with two layer transistor pixel stacked CMOS, so that's pretty cool in a way. And again, the zoom lens, the second sensor, pretty much gives you aperture between f2.3 and f2.8, so that's quite dramatic in a way. On top of that, you got pretty cool features suiting content creators, including product showcase setting, which has come in the and Sony's cameras. So again, it allows you to essentially set the focus of the camera to the product. That's a pretty cool feature. But on top of that, you have a 5,000 mAh battery that gives you 20 hours of video playback, HD video playback, by the way. Wireless charging, so you get 30 minutes of fast charge, 30 minutes of quick charge up to 50%, according to Sony, by the way. But yeah, as I said, an interesting flagship phone with beefier cameras and an 8 Gen 2 chip. And it's going to cost you around $1,500. And we're available from, and we're going on pre-orders from June the 1st. So a pretty cool flagship phone that is. And while we're already talking about phones, generally, if $1,500 is quite a lot of money, you might want to check out the Xperia 10 Mark V, the new mid-range phone from Sony. I'm surprised Sony still makes mid-range phones on top of the Xperia 1 series. So the Xperia 10 Mark V pretty much has a 6.1-inch Full HD Plus OLED display, Snapdragon 695 5G chip, apparently not an upgrade from the previous one, but again, will do sufficiently. A headphone jack. This is something to have on mid-range phones, pretty much. And on top of that, you got a triple camera setup on the back, so giving you three different apertures, f2.2, f1.8, and f2.2. So a regular ultra-wide and a macro. So that's pretty cool in a way. And you got a 5,000 mAh battery, giving you 34 hours of HD video playback, and IP65 and 68 water and dust resistance. And that's because you have the Gorilla Glass Victus on the phone front of the display, and in the back also. It's a pretty decent phone, and you also got stereo speakers, so not bad for a mid-range phone if you can find it, that is. And also, this phone has a 21:9 aspect ratio like the Xperia 1 series of phones. You get 6GB of RAM and 128GB of storage, and yeah, as I said, it comes in quite nice looking light colors, and as I said, we'll start from roughly $450 to $500 US, because we don't have the US pricing. Instead, we have the European and British pricing, which is around 449 euros or 399 British pounds. Apparently, be available from the middle of June. Good luck trying to find this mid-range phone. It's pretty decent, pretty much. And apparently, as I said, it weighs 159 grams. So it's apparently the lightest 5G phone out there. Kind of a rarity, if you ask me. But again, a pretty interesting mid-range phone nonetheless. Let's talk about another set of Android phones that have launched this past week, the Poco F5 and F5 Pro. I've kind of touched upon last week that Poco is going to be showing off these phones, and now we have these phones out in the flesh. These are pretty good value for money, incredible value for money compared to the previous phones we've talked about. So the Poco F5 is basically the global variant of the Redmi Note 12 Turbo, like I've said ages ago, potentially. So that's pretty cool in a way. And the F5 Pro is basically the global variant of the Redmi K60. Usually, Redmi K-series phones kind of get a rebrand to Poco F-series phones, which kind of makes sense because if the Redmi K-series was sold all over the world, it would dilute sales of the original Redmi phones. So that's pretty interesting in a way. The Poco F5 comes with the Snapdragon 7 Plus Gen 2, pretty much the first phone out there with this chip on the global market. On top of that, you have a 6.67-inch 120Hz OLED display, 5,000 mAh battery, 67W wired fast charging, 64MP camera on the back, 8MP ultra-wide, 2MP macro, 16MP front camera. like the Chinese variant to a degree. Also, the F5 Pro, on the other hand, is a little different. You get a 5,160 mAh battery. On top of that, you get a Snapdragon 8 Plus Gen 1 chip, a bit of a bump up compared to the F5. You lose the headphone jack on this one, so it's something to keep in mind. You get the faster chip, of course, 30 watts of wireless fast charging, and a QHD Plus OLED 120Hz display. So pretty cool specs if you ask me. And again, the Pro variant has almost a similar back camera, but you get 8K recording support on the main sensor and a 16 megapixel selfie camera. So that's pretty cool in a way. And the F5 Pro, on the other hand, has an in-display fingerprint sensor, whereas the F5 has a side-mounted fingerprint sensor button, so that's something to keep in mind. You're probably wondering about pricing now. The regular Poco F5 with the base spec of 8GB of RAM and 256GB of storage will set you back $379. The Pro, on the other hand, will set you back $449 and is already available on Amazon, through Xiaomi's own online store, and through a whole bunch of retailers in different parts of the world. So that's pretty interesting in a way. It's a pretty good value for money if you look at it. $380 is not bad for a mid-range chip compared to what you're kind of almost going to pay for mid-range phones in the same sort of vein and price point with the processor and the cameras. It's a pretty good value in a way. If you could deal with Xiaomi software, which I've kind of heard is the biggest pain point with the Poco phones, it's fairly great value for money. The Pro, though, will get you a little bit more, but I would probably wait for the sales before I'd get the F5 Pro, even though you're getting a much faster processor in a way, but it's definitely a great value for money regardless. All right, we've kind of talked about phones. Let's switch over to handhelds. Asus has announced more details about the ROG Ally. So we talked about it many, many weeks ago on the podcast. So you can go back and check out that episode if you have the time. But briefly, before we kind of recap, the ROG Ally is really Asus's answer to the Steam Deck, which has been hugely popular. Now we've got more information about this bad boy. First of all, it'll have two variants. One with a Ryzen Z1 chip and another one with a Z1 Extreme SoC chip. And it's a big difference in performance, roughly 4 times the performance difference between the two models. The maxed out spec will be 4 times more powerful than the other one, pretty much in terms of horsepower. Both will have a full HD display with 500 nits, 120Hz refresh rate, variable, which is great to have, and a quieter fan than the Steam Deck, apparently. So that's pretty cool in a way. The Ryzen Z1, in case you missed it, again, is like AMD's like handheld chip for handhelds primarily, so that's pretty cool. And you pretty much get it based on the Zen 4 architecture, and again, it's a definite upgrade from what you have on a Steam Deck. Apparently, it's capable of hitting clock speeds of up to 5.1 GHz on CPU side, and GPU can go up to 2.7 GHz. 5.1 GHz GPU speed overclocked is fairly not bad. It's pretty impressive. Let's just say that. Now you're probably wondering about the price. The ROG Ally Z1 variant will start from $599, but will only be available in the third quarter of this year, whereas the Z1 Extreme will be selling for $699 in the US from Best Buy, and I'll be releasing next month on June the 13th. Are you excited about the ROG Ally? Are you going to be getting one? Do let me know. But it's an interestingly exciting gaming handheld nonetheless. And finally, Fairphone. They've released some wireless over-the-air headphones. So if you're looking for some environmentally friendly tech, and you don't want another set of wireless headphones that you're going to definitely send to the landfill, you might want to check out Fairphone's Fairbuds XL. It's a pretty cool gadget, let's just say that. The over-ear headphones are designed to be repair-friendly. They're made from recycled materials, so much so that they're made from 100% recycled aluminum, 100% recycled solder paste, 100% vegan leather for the ear cushions and headband, and 80% recycled plastic, along with 100% recycled textile pouch that you'll get with the headphones in the box. So that's pretty cool in a way. As for it being wireless headphones, they support active noise cancellation with a feature dubbed Digital Hybrid ANC. Again, that uses 6 microphones that are four positioned on the right and 2 on the left, and that's on the ear cups kind of. And you get the ability to switch from ambient to noise cancelling straight away, like most popular wireless headphones. it's certified IP54 water and dust, water resistance. That means you can tolerate moderate rain and sweat, so that's pretty cool in a way, and supports Bluetooth like most wireless headphones. But these are environmentally friendly and don't even come with a charging cable in the box, but has USB-C on the headphones, so if you have a phone with USB-C, you can charge these up comfortably. And again, as I've said earlier, they're easy to repair, given that it's easy to sort of open the whole thing up and change out parts. So that's pretty cool in a way. And you can sort of open the cover and change out the battery, and that's pretty cool, like most Fairphone products. The Fairbuds XL is already available in Europe and will set you back €249. You can get them on their website. Again, pretty interesting if you're quite environmentally conscious and you are looking for some wireless headphones, pretty much. Alrighty, that leads us to the end of this week's episode. What do you think of everything you've heard today so far? All this stuff that Google showed off, Google I.O., Apple releasing Final Cut Pro and Logic Pro finally for the iPad, and the Poco F5 or the Sony Xperia 1 Mark V. Let me know. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at @Sayed_Mao99. Follow me there if you can. Send a DM, send a message, or comment on one of my posts if you can. Subscribe to this podcast where you're listening right now. Share this podcast to your friends and family. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts, because that definitely bumps the show up in the algorithm. Till next week, this is Obama signing out. Wherever we are, whatever we're up to, I hope you have a wonderful day and weekend ahead. And again, hopefully see you next week with another episode of Mao's Gadget Talk. All right, thank you for listening. Ciao.